Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 573. Science Faction, we should talk to idiots.
Is this your plea to get on the Joe Rogan podcast? Is this your... Joe Rogan, please, we need to talk to these idiots. You have the platform, but you're afraid. Listen, I get it. You're in a stance. You're king idiot. You all of a sudden can't become king rational, king science. Let us be the heels on your show.
Yeah.
Bobby will fucking submit Stephen Novella on your show.
That's right. Yeah. Well, see, that's why I do the flip back and forth. When I'm going against the scientists, that's when I bring out the fists. When I go against the general public, then I bring out the science. That's my general rule.
Yeah. I'd be. Listen, Bobby, you got some good hands. You're a good boxer. But yeah, I would recommend not stepping up to Rogan. I think.
No. He's way too well-rounded. I'm not going to mess that up. So I'll go science against
Rogan. Quit talking about his girth. Listen, we all know about Joe Rogan's legendary hog. Very well-rounded.
I go science against Rogan, spinning back fist against Novella.
Makes you just a science bully. That's...
ooh, that's my new Instagram name. Oh, and speaking of Instagram, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how you doing this afternoon?
You just don't even give a fuck about the segues anymore. Like you're Mr. Instagram? Like,
yes.
Like, if we were to jump on your IG, you would be... tell us about your Instagram. You're clearly an influencer.
Yeah, I've never used it technically, but I assume I would be the best at it if I started.
Bobby, you'd have a lot of attractive teenage influencers to compete with.
Yeah, but how many sweet projectile points can they post on a daily basis? So, you know.
You'd be surprised how many of them are spear aficionados. Oh, you're talking about...
I love that magazine, by the way.
Just, it has like a sexy teenage girl dressed as like an anime girl, but she's holding like a sweet spear from like fucking Rome.
Oh, see, I thought it would be like cigar aficionado, where it's just all dudes over 50 with like seven figures in the bank. So it's just a dude in a really well-tailored Armani suit sitting there just holding a spear in a very expensive leather chair.
I always assumed Arnold Schwarzenegger was on every cover of Cigar Aficionado, and I assume it'd be the same for Spear Aficionado.
I think they went back and forth between Arnold Schwarzenegger and Fidel Castro for a while.
And the Dos Equis guy. And before that, it was just a bunch of old 1920s comedians.
You know, Damian, in our intros, you brought up Joe Rogan a little bit earlier, and I gotta say, we got an interesting question from one of our longtime fans. You wanted to make sure I caught this, so you actually texted me this. You screenshotted it and texted me it.
Yeah, I rarely, fans ask a lot of questions, and they're really science-oriented questions, and like, that's a Bobby thing. This ain't for me. But this one, I was like, all right, this fan is finally jumping on a point I've been getting on. Is that you masturbate to Joe Rogan? Listen, do it in your free time, by all means. But on this educational podcast, way too much. And it's something you haven't done for a bit because the public has turned against him in the last few years.
Well, so let's go into it because I think this is kind of important. It's a good time to do this, which is so one of our very old fans, Nick, who you very generously nicknamed, what was it? 10-pound dick Nick, I think it was.
I think he corrected me to 17-pound or something.
Yes.
And I was like, well, I'm sorry for it. I was...
We'll call him by his nom de plume, MBA Kirkland. So he sent me a link to this Joe Rogan podcast, which has been kind of making the rounds. I think this is it, by the way. I don't get the link because Damian just texted me a picture of it. But I think it is the one that is making the rounds about vaccination. Is that right, Damian?
I don't know. I didn't click. I just knew somebody was shitting on you for Rogan. I'm not going to click on anything Rogan related.
And I have heard a couple of quotes from it. I haven't heard the actual thing. I always like to hear the originals before I start talking shit, but I will just give my two cents on what I've heard so far, which is he was saying, you know, the problem is there are too many vaccinated people, and that's what's causing these mutations like Delta, and that's what's causing the problem is actually vaccinated people.
He has a point. A second thought, Joe Rogan might be onto something.
So to run this back, if you go back to like 2014 or 2015 when we were doing this show, I actually listed Joe Rogan at the time as one of the best science educators of the year. And I actually stand by that. If you look back at that year, you know, that's before podcasts took off. So he had the most popular podcast and a lot of people were listening to it, a lot of people who weren't normally exposed to science. So, you know, even if Radiolab is a better science podcast, the people listening to Radiolab are the people who are already kind of on the side of science, so to speak. You are preaching to the choir. And so when you have somebody like Rogan, who has a popular following, who, by the way, himself believed in a bunch of pseudoscience stuff about moon landings and crazy shit like that. If you have somebody like that who brings on real scientists for hours at a time to talk to them and educate the populace, then he is, and he was at that point, a great science educator. Now, the problem becomes his audience expanded. Obviously, you know, he's put on 1,000+ shows, so the guests, you know, you can't always get gold, and so you get some shitty guests in there. And it seems, and now I must give you a little caveat here, which is I stopped listening to Rogan when he switched over to Spotify, not necessarily out of any kind of protest or anything, literally just out of inconvenience. I'm like, I'm not downloading another goddamn podcast app. Like, I've got mine. It's fine. If you're not on here, then you and I need to part ways. So
have you done the same with Last Podcast on the Left?
Yes.
As well?
Yeah, I did that with Adam Carolla when he did it back in the day. I like to just keep your shit open and rich to the regular public. That's why even though we have a Patreon, we do our regular free show every week as well. So keep
hello, my name is John Spotify, CEO of Spotify. I would like, I'm willing to pay you $3 billion to be the new flagship podcast.
Absolutely. Do I have to kill Damien?
Can you hear me?
No.
Okay, well then absolutely. Yeah, he.
Even if you would have said no, I still would have done it. I'm a billionaire, man.
We could just not take him, but we don't like him. Like, we think the world would be better off without Damien.
Try and catch me now. But I will say that even when I was listening to him up until that point, there were a lot of science misinformation that was on that show, and I would bring that up occasionally. I mean, listen, since back to those times when I was calling him the best science educator online right now, I was also pointing out the fact that he had nutbag and guy who's never said anything not insane, Graham Hancock on. And Graham Hancock is like the Lex Luthor of archaeologists. He only says batshit crazy, factually untrue nonsense in a British accent. I almost think it's like Borat, where he's just trying to see how many Americans he can get to buy total bullshit based on a British accent. Like, it's almost a long Borat bit if it wasn't so destructive. He's horrible. And I've been making fun of Rogan for having him on the show for a long time. So it's not like I think everything that guy does is good or has done is good. What I could say is I saw a shift to some pretty prevalent misinformation as I was like beginning to stop listen. And from what I've heard, and again, I want to give everybody credit. I've only heard this secondhand, so who knows? But from what I've heard, it seems like that has gone even further on as time went on with Spotify. And so it seems like he is, I mean, I would just say that some of the stuff that I've seen leak out of his show over the past year, this stuff aside, surrounding COVID has been horrible. And like, frankly, he's got such a big audience that if his words encourage even a small percentage of them to not take COVID seriously or to not get a vaccine or blah, 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 there is literally dead people around right now because they listen to the Joe Rogan podcast, or more likely because their grandson listened to the Joe Rogan podcast and then came into their assisted living facility and coughed on them. Like, there's a death toll. There's something really serious going on there. It's why I take pride in the fact that we don't have enough listeners to really hurt anybody. Like, we're just stuck in mediocrity and we'll never impact anything. But
Why would he ruin like family dinners? Like some kid, like, oh, I was listening to Science Faction podcast around the kid, and then my son made a dick joke at the Christmas dinner. Like, that is the biggest threat you have, listening to Science Faction, which is pretty awesome.
Bullshit. I'll tell you what, if I had the power Rogan has, Novello would be stringed up outside of his goddamn house.
And he'd be wondering, why do you hate me so much and not Graham Hancock? Graham Hancock's taking pictures.
There could be only one, bitch. I'm taking your power. Yeah.
We don't even compete for the same audience. Name one person. And by the way, Science Faction fans, please email the show, write to the show. I am confident that we do not have anybody who listens to Skeptic's Guide and Science Faction.
No, because one of them, by definition, hate comedy. Anyway, long story short, I also believe heavily in taking the good with the bad. So, like, let's say Rogan went back onto a regular podcast app and he had an interview with somebody who I love to listen to, like Sam Harris or something like that. I'm going to listen to that because that's interesting to me. And he might well give out a lot of good information. And then I can also distinguish between that and putting on a, let's just call it less credible guest and saying bullshit. And I can say in one sense it's bullshit. Not only is it bullshit, it's dangerous bullshit. Not only is it dangerous bullshit based on the size of the audience, it has caused X numbers of deaths, which are probably calculable. And it still doesn't take away the fact that in 2014 or 2015 or wherever I said it, he was putting out the most legitimate science content on the web while also interspersing it with nuttiness like Graham Hancock. And you just kind of got to take the good and leave the bad.
Which is why I encourage everybody to listen to my Dungeons & Dragons podcast, Awful Neutral, made with a lot of friends from the show, because it will only cause sexual death and not actual biological death.
Well, that and the death of your social life, because you will officially be a horrible, horrible nerd. Don't listen to that. All right, let's move right on.
Many of your friends who you regularly hang out with are on the show. Dave Callens.
Now he's a nerd. Science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, article number one, we should talk to idiots.
Are you asking for Alex Jones? Is that what is? I can go get him. He's never fun.
You
he's
know, like, Alex's opinion is actually going to factor in quite a bit in this particular article.
All right, I'll go get him. I think I hear him rummaging around the trash cans in my alley. Hold on. Just talk about science. I'll be right back.
Well, yeah, while you're waiting, I'm going to let you guys know what this is about. So this is a really interesting piece. This isn't a research article. This is an opinion piece in this week's Nature, written by Lee McIntyre. And it's a very, very interesting article. It was actually sent to me by a fan. And I'll tell you, there's a few things that are really interesting in it. And there's a turn at the very end where I learned something.
You get hit with a chair.
It was the heel. Yeah. I learned something new about science and science education that I had not known that was very important to me. So I will share that with you. But first, I want to kind of get through what Lee says. So this is, again, an opinion piece in this week's Nature. And it's kind of a call to arms for scientific communication to go out and talk to anti-science people specifically, be they conspiracy theorists, anti-vaxxers, flat earthers, or any other type of anti-science movements. And I wholeheartedly agree. And this might seem like no duh to you, but let me let you know, as somebody who literally got a graduate degree in science in the public and public communication of science
from Trump University.
Sad. This is actually like a very controversial topic, because there is this idea in public science education that engaging with pseudoscience gives it legitimacy. So you don't debate a creationist, because simply allowing a debate to occur insinuates that they have some kind of valid point of view that needs to be addressed, when in fact it doesn't, so you shouldn't do it. And there's a lot of research kind of in terms of
the Ken Ham, Bill Nye debate.
I mean, that's a great point, because Ken Ham wouldn't be nearly as famous if researchers and scientists didn't debate him. And so, like, there is this idea that you shouldn't do that. In fact, I took a lot of shit for the Great Flat Earth debate that we did back in 2017. Big debate I set up. This is, by the way, at the nascency of Flat Earth. This is when you hadn't actually heard of Flat Earth. It was like a fringe thing somebody on Reddit thought of.
This is before Shaquille O'Neal got into it and changed the face.
It was before it was trendy. I'm a Flat Earth hipster, I guess. I was debating before the sister, but I took a lot of shit. I actually took shit. People who I went to grad school with were like sending me messages like, hey, we were both in the class where we learned that this was wrong, right? Like, maybe you should look at what you're doing. And I wholeheartedly disagree. And Lee McIntyre kind of takes this point and directs it at going in, changing people's minds. And he does. He goes to Flat Earth conferences. He goes and talks to coal miners about climate change. He talks to people who have extreme denialism, and he kind of says, well, here's what I do, and it kind of works. So he does caution the same thing that we kind of know over and over again in public science education, that just reciting facts at an anti-science person doesn't usually make a difference. So, like, if I'm sitting there against a creationist, he's like, the world is 6,000 years old, and I'm like, well, no. Let's talk about the, you know, Earth forming from an accretion disk outside the sun and stuff. It's going to be totally uninterested. It's not going to work, right? You have to find
a
different way.
Hey, listen here, bro. I slept. My teacher tried this shit, and it didn't work then.
Yeah. Well, it's 2021.
You think you're better than...
We all have the access to the internet in our pockets. If simply getting the actual information was the problem, there wouldn't be a single uninformed or wrongfully informed person out there. But the whole point is that people are able to remain ignorant under a sea of knowledge. So yeah, so he goes out and talks to these people, and he actually makes a point that I have said before in almost the same terms that I really, really think is true, which is this dismissal of conspiracy theorists, of these people who are far out, this saying like, hey, just don't talk to them because you're just going to promote the idea and we should just ignore it and stuff. It doesn't work. And also, it's unethical to abandon people as too far gone just because they believe in crazy shit. Assuming they're never going to change becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy if no one decides to talk to them. And if we want to change people's minds, you have to actually try. It's not going to happen on accident. And by the way, every ex-conspiracy theorist is living proof that people can have their minds changed, even if they have really extreme views.
It's insane to me that science educators as a whole have taken the role of like Ned Flanders' parents and like, man, we've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas. Like, the country is on fire and it's fueled by disinformation. And we've tried the let's ignore the flat earther, let's ignore the anti-vaccine approach. It hasn't worked.
Yeah.
It has been a spectacular failure.
Well, so that actually brings up a good point, which is if it doesn't work to just recite facts at these people, what does? Well, he uses a form that's somewhat similar to something called street epistemology, which is a...
David Blaine is there.
You can look that up to see that. But what he does is he listens to them. In the case of the Flat Earth Convention, he like showed up and just spent a day just listening to everybody and not saying a thing. And then he starts talking to them about their ideas, and he asks what they would need to change their mind. And almost inevitably, the answer is evidence. They say, well, I just need good evidence. And then he says, well, how come this evidence that is already established is not sufficient for you? And they will usually bring up a very fringe conspiracy theory that they believe discredits that evidence. And then he flips it on them and goes, well, why do you trust the evidence for the conspiracy theory? Now it forces them into a corner where they have to explain why the evidence for this conspiracy theory is so convincing, but the evidence for the actual evidence is not. And it switches the onus, but also it's a bit of a Socratic method, constantly asking questions to get to what they actually believe. It ends up finding the cracks in these really bad philosophical or intellectual frameworks. Because again, they are very bad. Whether you're talking about flat earth or creationism or any of this stuff, all of that stuff is a flawed philosophy that has tons of cracks in it. So all you have to do is find them and expose them in a way that doesn't expose them to you. You already see the cracks. It's a shitty philosophy, right? You already see them. But to expose them to the person promoting them.
I'm sorry, Alex Jones here. I was finishing up some dumpster chili. Didn't want to come in here. I have a podcast too. I'm not going to come in here with bad audio, clicking around a spoon and bowl. Listen, I might be against everything you do, Robert Timothy. Everything you do. You are the antithesis of one Alex Jones. You are not a virile, red-blooded American, and you hate freedoms. That's a fact. However, I will not shit on your audio. That is something I will not do.
I respect the shit out of that, Alex.
All right, well, yeah, listen, I think a lot of the thing is like, if I'd been there, I think like I could have countered his message by just ripping off my shirt and fighting the man, or at least challenging him to a chili, some sort of chili consumption contest. Like, that's the thing. Us red-blooded Americans, we don't like being talked down to by you big city science types. We don't like having our way of life questioned and looking inward. If there's an angry man ranting in a truck, we're going to listen to that guy over you any day. In fact, you might get to me for one day, but then community pressure and the Alex Jones podcast, as well as the Joe Rogan podcast, will be turning things around on you.
And then some dude in F-150 in the middle of Iowa will really make a good point.
Alex Jones, I think, brings up a good point, though. I mean, like, if he gets to these guys for one day, I mean, like, I've had conversations with, like, army buddies who believe some nutty shit.
Yeah.
And I can get them to open their eyes for at least our conversation because we have some trust. And he knows that I'm not, like, he knows that I'm probably not a Pizzagate pedophile Democrat, which is a platform.
And by the way, that's a good point, is that trust is a big part of like cracking that open and cracking that shell. And the fact of the matter is, that's just that.
But a week later, they are back to nutty shit.
Yeah. I mean, it's time. You can't expect a miracle. It's not going to happen overnight. But
like, oh, I caught dumb again. Like, oh, damn it.
Over time, enough of these questions will kind of filter through to some people. Again, you're not going to convince everybody, but some of them will filter through. Now, I'm going to go ahead and right off the bat and say a lot of this has to do with mental illness, like way more than we talk about, because I have delved deep into the flat earth community. There isn't really somebody who believes in a flat earth who doesn't have some mental illness. That's not a thing. Or at the worst, an extreme personality disorder. But there is mental illness aspects to a lot of these things as well. So some people, you will never change their mind because of that. However, I really like his tactics, and it kind of mimics the tactic I used on the Great Flat Earth debate. Damien, if you remember, I told you when I was prepping for this, I was like, you know, I can't just spit facts at him, as Lee McIntyre says. That's not going to work. And I can't go in and, like, show him the contradictions based on science, you know, in terms of, we talked about, like, the acceleration of the Earth and all this kind of stuff. I can't really go in there and do that because he's not accepting the basis. And so what I said is the trick to debating somebody like this, especially somebody who's really into flat Earth, it was I had to understand the philosophy completely and totally, all of the ideas behind it. And I had to find not the flaws in the ideas, because every part of the idea is a flaw. I had to find the ones that were self-contradicting, that went against their own beliefs. Because, for instance, if you're talking to somebody, let's say I'm talking to somebody and they think Star Wars is real. Okay, I can't convince you by just, you know, stating the facts. It was made by George Lucas and this year, blah, 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 blah. If they think, you know, Star Wars is real and is a real thing, then if they see the Millennium Falcon flying by, that is nothing big because it is real, right? However, what I need to do is not look for the Millennium Falcons flying by and saying, look, that's not real because there's no such thing as Millennium Falcons. I have to look through their philosophy and see where the contradictions equate to a, let's say, Game of Thrones dragon. Because there are no Game of Thrones dragons in Star Wars. So if I can find the outlier that points to something that doesn't exist in their reality, even in their own personal philosophy and reality and inversion of scientific beliefs, that's where I'm going to find success. Because all these people are sitting around going, look, there's no such...
Bobby, there could be a dragon anywhere.
Well, but all these people are going around saying, like, look, there's no such thing as lightsabers and stuff like that. And they're like, in my world, it is. So in their world, they're living in Star Wars. So if they see a lightsaber pop up, that's totally normal to them. However, in that world, if Khaleesi comes riding on the back of Drogon, there's a problem because that doesn't fit with all the rules of the Star Wars world. And so everybody who debates these people makes the mistake of trying to point out that Star Wars isn't real instead of finding the Game of Thrones dragons within their Star Wars philosophy. And that was my tactic. And I actually got that very ardent flat earther to agree at least three or four times that his explanation could not work. Given what was presented, he wasn't able to make a description of it, and he admitted it was a flaw in his plan. Like, that happened like three or four times. And this is somebody who does not, by the way, admit that they are wrong very easily. And I was able to get that out of him.
Yeah, what's his stance now?
I mean, he didn't say flat earth was wrong. He's still a flat earther, but he admitted that those things were problems with his belief set, and he couldn't explain them.
I would tell any young Padawan that you were talking to, and I would remind him that the dark side is filled with deceit. And that this guy's trying to shit on the Game of Thrones Star Wars crossover, and he needs to shut the fuck up. Disney is talking.
But what really threw me a loop when I read this was a little paragraph he had talking about the backfire effect, which is a common reason scientists say they don't want to engage in conspiracy theorist debates, is because oftentimes when you present somebody with a bunch of information that supports your belief, that disproves their belief, it actually will reinforce their original beliefs. And it's called the backfire effect. There's a big paper in 2010 that kind of like brought it out and talked about it, and it's since been cited over and over again. Now, here's what's interesting. And this is actually what the impetus that I really wanted to cover this article for. I'm a science nerd. I read like literally 40 to 50 abstracts a week minimum and report to you guys on at least a half dozen of them every single week. I literally have a master's degree in communicating science to the general public. And I've bought into the backfire effect hook and sinker for years without diving into the real science behind it. And Lee McIntyre points out, oh, no, no, a bunch of people have tried to replicate the studies and found the original studies unreplicable. And there is some level of backfire effect, but it's not nearly as strong or as prevalent or as common as we thought. It's actually a fairly rare thing that doesn't really work the way it was presented in that original paper, and even the original paper's authors have rescinded it. And this was one of those like moments. Like, it just blew my fucking mind because I went into all the deck research and he was right. Like, we've been citing the backfire effect. There's entire podcasts about the backfire effect that were made in the last 2 years or something, and all of them seem to fail to mention the fact that it's unreplicable. And even the original authors have said, no, it wasn't actually what we thought it was. It's this really narrow condition that it happens sometimes in certain things. But we should not be using this as an excuse not to talk to people. And this has been the number one excuse for the past 10 years, not to talk to people about this kind of stuff. Gigantic gigantic information for me, who considers themselves like a public science education expert to some extent, and really, really reinforces this idea that we should go out and talk to these people. We should have open dialogues. We should ask questions. We should see what their methodologies are and see if we can't get them to come to the conclusion that they're wrong, as opposed to just trying to tell them that they're wrong.
Let's take a step back, though, because you keep focusing on this flat Earth thing, which flat Earth, you know, it's certainly disconcerting, but it's not the huge problem. It's not the raging inferno consuming lives.
Sure.
Anti-vaxxing is. And
yes.
You show me somebody you can throw facts at or
that's what I'm saying. There's don't
nothing,
throw facts there's, at
them. If people have their tribes and anything you say as the liberal comic, Bobby,
yes.
I don't know, even if you're listening, like those examples I use talking to people.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, this is a great example. So this is a great example. You brought up anti-vax, which obviously means something a little different nowadays than it used to. But he cited a study that was actually done on anti-vax, or at least vaccine questioning parents who weren't intending to give their kids a vaccine. And in this case, they used that same tactic of listening to the parents and then asking them questions, asking them about their reasoning. And in just doing this, in something like a half-day intervention, they were able to change that group 9% one way. That is shockingly significant for a half-day intervention on something like anti-vax, which is usually a deeply held belief and considered very hard to change. You might expect that you might change a few percentage points that were within the margin of error, but like almost 10% change in that amount of time is significant. So this does work. Like, that's the thing. It works, and it specifically has worked against anti-vax people.
I don't know. 9% doesn't seem like a whole heck of a, like, I don't know. It seems like
9% in half a day, though. That's huge. Like,
if you could get a bunch of conservatives or nutty natural news, if you can get Gwyneth Paltrow or the Fox News audience into a room for a half a day, great. I don't know. It can work with super heavy intervention. Are you saying that we all should just start arguing on social media all
Not
the time?
Arguing, talking in person, and usually, like I said, using that Socratic questioning method, because it forces them to be the ones who have to justify the differences in, for instance, the types of evidence that they will accept, as opposed to you pointing out that they're making those mistakes. It's like therapy, right? Your therapist knows what's wrong with you the second week you're in there, but it takes 5 years to get you to come to the exact same realization. It's a similar thing. You know what's wrong with their ideas the second you talk to them. It's going to take them a little bit longer.
Or we lean into this whole conspiracy. We create a version of the vaccine that, I don't know, maybe it kills off people with an IQ below X, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one we release into the public. You know, we're like, hey, you want us to be the bad guy? Fine, we'll be the bad guy. We're going to fix society now. We're finally going to do what we need to do. New world order. No dumb people.
Oh, your Thanos mentality has come through, Damien.
Okay, hold on. Let's just say let's do Avengers again. But yes. Instead, he's like, I could basically snap away everybody with a red hat. I'm okay with this. I am okay with. I'm like, oh man, Thanos has just saved democracy. Holy shit.
Oh dear. Article number 2: The end of the Gulf Stream.
No, we're even Captain America and Thanos are shaking hands right now in my head. I'm just.
So this is an interesting article on Science Daily. We'll just cover it real quick, but it's really interesting because it suggests that the Atlantic Meridional Overturned Circulation, or AMOC, which the Gulf Stream is a part of, might soon be disrupted. It's actually at its weakest that it has been in 1,000 years. So the AMOC transports warm water masses from the tropics northward at the ocean surface and cool water southward at the ocean bottom. So basically, the water that's warming up by the equator goes on the surface northward, while the super, super cold water in the northern Atlantic moves towards the tropics along the bottom. It's really interesting because it's actually a huge mediator of climate, and it's the reason Europe is the way it is. You don't really think about this
Fancy?
A lot. Yes.
Huh.
And full of weird-looking cars. Yeah, we don't think about this a lot, but Europe should actually be way colder than it is. Europe enjoys this really nice, moderate climate.
Really, you've never been to a British supper.
But, like, if you look at a map, go look at a map. Look at the lines of latitude and longitude. Just look at where actual parts of Europe are. If you think of, like, the south of France, which we think of as, like, this Florida-like beach Mediterranean place, which it is, It's basically the same latitude as northern New England. And if you look at England and Ireland, they're the same latitudes as, like, the Canadian tundra. Like, it doesn't make sense. You're like, wait a second, it's, like, fairly livable in all of these places. How is that possible? And the answer is the Gulf Stream, which is part of the AMOC. Basically, warm water that covers the top of the Atlantic Ocean that gets pushed that way carries with it warm air, and both of those things regulate the climate of Europe to make it much more like Europe than it is like fucking Canada, right? So the reason it's not Arctic tundra everywhere and everywhere north of Africa up there is basically because they have this really nice warm current that brings all this warm ocean water up from the tropics and all the cold stuff goes down. Well, it is the weakest it's been in 1,000 years. And we're not sure if it's about to collapse or if something big is about to happen. You might wonder, like, what's happening? What causes it? We have a couple of possible explanations. One, obviously, global warming. As that water warms up, its characteristics are going to be different. And then number two, related to global warming, a huge influx of cold fresh water from melting glaciers in places like Greenland are kind of fucking the system up. And so the idea is, if this system gets fucked up enough that the Gulf Stream stops, good luck, Europe.
I have a general climate change question, Bobby. Let's just say we invent fusion technology tomorrow and we're able to implement mass carbon capturing technology.
Right.
How many hundreds of years or how many years would it take for things to start returning to normal, for the clock to rewind?
Well, it depends how much carbon you could pull out. If you could pull all the carbon out that we put since the Industrial Revolution, it would take the exact amount of time it does that. So one day, you know, if you had a big thing that could pull all that carbon out in one day, then it would take one day. If it took hundreds of years, then it would take hundreds of years.
So as soon as you remove it, water would start freezing at the caps, at the poles.
Some, yeah, you would certainly have much lower temperatures. Now, there are some snowball effects you'd have to factor in. So, like, there would be a little bit of interesting calculus in this. Things like, as snow melts in snow-covered areas, the white of the snow is no longer reflecting sun, so it absorbs more heat than it would otherwise. And so there is an increased warming effect, and there's, you know, some gases that are absorbed within the ocean waters that need to get redissolved and stuff. So there would probably be some other components that cause supplemental warming, but they would be so minimal compared to climate change itself that I don't think we would really notice.
Listen, okay, I am all for removing all the carbon and doing that, but we're so close to drowning Florida. Can't we just wait till, like, Florida starts struggling and then pull all the carbon?
What if we just weighed Florida down? Like, what if we treated Florida the way Florida treats us as a country and literally weighed them down?
We have the mafia do, like, cement shoes to the fucking state. Or, like, when Florida's just barely submerged, we hit it with a bunch of fan boats like it does to fucking manatees.
Oh, that's our good Florida torture porn right there.
Oh, man. I hit a Mountain Dew geyser. I'm rich.
All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 573, where you learned all about why we should talk to idiots and why Europe might be fucked. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 574.
Damn, this is some good dumpster chili. Wait, this ain't chili. Well, some of it is. Oh, well.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.